Hello, and thank you for choosing this Analyst Insight podcast from the Information Security Forum. Hello to our regular listeners, and we have an increasing number of those. I hope we are continually surprising and entertaining you. Welcome also to listeners who are tuning in for the first time. Keep coming back, as we have a very varied roster of subjects to tackle over the next few months. Thanks to everyone for the continued support. To be honest, we've been a bit surprised to how fast our audience is growing, but that's a good thing. Tell your friends, tell your colleagues, and send them a link maybe, but don't make it look like a fish. We don't want to be responsible for any of those incidents. Thank you. We're trying to make these podcasts as diverse as possible. So if there's an issue you think we should pursue, if you've got questions and comments on what we have already covered, let us know. We are getting emails, so many thanks for getting in touch. I think we're talking to the people that have been contacting us. So we'll deal with those in future episodes. Contact details for myself are on the Audio Boom page, where every episode is now available. But this episode is the second in hopefully what will be quite a long-running series looking at information security careers. We're going to be doing a few podcasts exploring particular jobs, roles, pathways, you know, how they change as people build up some expertise. Today, we're looking at security testing, penetration testing, and we're talking to a few people who do that for a living. My name is Mark Ward. I'm a senior research analyst at the ISF. And though I was a journalist for many years, I do feel like I could have ended up as a security or penetration tester given different circumstances. Because as a journalist, I did a bit of hands-on hackery. I knew my way around Kali Linux for a while. And I cultivated a lot of contacts in that sector. I got some great stories from it as well. But also here to help guide the discussion is Barrett Thackeray, a former CISO and now a principal at the ISF, who has done the hard work to pull this series together. So thank you for that, Barrett. Hello.
Hi, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's going to be a pleasure talking to our guests, focusing on career pathways in pen testing, security testing. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we've got a great, some great guests, and they've had slightly different routes into this as a career, but it's definitely going to be interesting to explore that. So to go around those, we have with us Alex Miller from professional services company Mazar. Hello, Alex. Good to have you here. We have Barney Muller, who is pretty new to the field. Hello, Barney. And also we have Glenn Wilkinson, who has been doing this for a while, haven't you, Glenn? Good to have you.
Hi, Mark. Yeah, it seems I'm the granddad of security in the room.
Definitely. I won't tell you how old I am, because that would be giving away too much information. But just to start off then, Barrett, if we can talk a bit about sort of what the heck is security testing and penetration testing. So talk a bit about why we're doing this series, because there's, the reason is we want to demystify it a bit, because when I talk to people, they kind of fall into the field, and given more information, they might be here quicker.
Yeah, I think, Mark, it came about, I was doing some work for the UK Cybersecurity Council. And one of the areas they were grappling with was obviously the skills crisis, you know, more particularly in our field in cybersecurity. And one of the aspects that they found challenging was that it was very difficult for newcomers and even people in the field to find pathways, you know, find how to navigate this space. And often the discussion was around, well, I'm not quite sure whether I need a certification to do a particular job, or do I need a degree? And how many years experience do I need if I wanted to go from an intermediate level to a more senior level? And many, many questions around this. And so they started putting some information together for pathways. But I think it's still an area that really needs help. And so I think, you know, if ISF can assist with doing our bit to respond to the skills crisis, I think it'll make a difference. And so I think it's becoming increasingly more important now. So, it's fantastic to have our guests. And perhaps we can start with Glenn. Glenn, look, give us an overview of the security testing sort of landscape and pen testing within that. Where are we, and sort of how is it developing at the moment?
Yeah, excellent question. Where are we, and how did we get here? So. Yeah. Depending how far back we want to go, I'd say maybe the 90s, late 90s, mid 90s is a good place to start. When back then there wasn't really this idea of pen testing, but the notion of one day hacking was really getting its footing. It was kind of the heyday of hacker groups, you know, those funky acronyms, the Legion of Doom and Loft and Masters of Destruction, and those types of groups. And back then, hacking was mostly almost like graffiti, like spraying graffiti on the side of a building just to kind of show off your skills or poke at security. I think it was maybe in the early 2000s when there was a big migration of enterprises going online, having their core business operations online, that this almost secondary part of hacking came to be, where it was to a degree financially motivated by the criminals breaking into networks to maybe steal information or get a hold of data. And at the same time, we kind of noticed, well, on the flip side of that coin, the good guys, we just enjoy tinkering, we could start doing that kind of hacking, but as we say, for good, try and break in to show you where your weaknesses are. I often describe it to people who aren't familiar with the industry as ethical hacking. It's almost like hiring an ethical burglar to come and break into your home to show you where their weaknesses are. Because burglars generally have a different viewpoint and a different way of approaching security. The guy who installs the alarm, he's probably very good at certain things. The guy who bypasses alarms and breaks into things probably has a different viewpoint as well. I think that's where this the idea of pen testing first started taking off. It was much harder back then. So I got into this field, I guess, the late noughties, so 2008-09-ish. And back then it was, I guess, getting traction, but it was still quite difficult to go to a bank and say, hey, I'm offering some services. Do you want to pay me to hack into your bank? And back then, you got pretty funny looks. It was quite a hard sell. Whereas today, it's standard procedure. Everyone from the janitor to the CEO knows that security testing is as much part of any business as HR or finance or something. From my point of view, it's definitely evolved and matured, and it's almost a well-respected, well-known career path now. It was kind of a bit more fringe back in the earlier days, but I would definitely say now it's established, and there's definite avenues to get better avenues to choose this as a career path. There's a lot more guidance, a lot more resources, and I think thanks to podcasts like this and wonderful people like Bharat and Mark helping people get into the industry, a lot easier for people to choose this career path.
Yeah, because I think, certainly as a journalist, I remember writing in the 2000s about, well, obviously the dot-com boom, and that spurred a lot of people to, because it was suddenly money at stake. So they had things that they had to protect. But you also got the DDoS attacks and Yahoo and things around there as well. So there's a lot of cybercrime really took off around then. So interesting that this, I'm going to guess, understandably, why this took off at the same time.
Just to ask, in terms of entering the field, Glenn, and then we'll come to Barney, would you say that there are two or three sort of core areas or core entry points? Pen testing might be one. Security analyst probably is another entry point. But beyond that, you have to actually go through those routes in order to get, something like threat analyst or architecture or something like that. Would that be the right way?
Yeah, I think broadly speaking, do you like breaking things or do you like making things? So are you an anarchist or an engineer? If you like breaking things, then the pen tester route is for you. Like that's your bread and butter. Just break, 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 break. Like curiosity and tearing things apart and that kind of a childhood curiosity. And that's for some people. Other people prefer to make things. How can I build a secure environment, or how can I ensure that things are defended and well looked after? So I think those are the two broad routes to get in the industry. And then once you figure out which route is more appealing to you, then maybe break it down in terms of, like you say, maybe it's sitting in a SOC or threat analysis or maybe even DevOps security or building secure applications or that kind of thing. On the other side, it's, okay, I like breaking stuff. Well, do I like breaking networks, Wi-Fi networks or wired networks or cellular networks, or do I prefer reverse engineering applications, or do I
Glenn, can I ask, do people tend to specialize then? Because you can't break everything, or you can't know about everything to break everything. So people tend to
definitely.
So, find the thing.
There are definitely some hackers out there who are just good at everything and it's super annoying. But generally, most of us are kind of good at one thing in particular. I think a really good quality of any good hacker is curiosity. So most of us know a little bit about everything, or at least appreciate the stuff that we're not that good at, but be super curious. And we can, I think you could read a report or something on anything in the field. If I'm not that hot at reverse engineering, I could definitely go and read a report on the latest reverse engineering. But yeah, there definitely are specialists. I think there's almost hyper-specialization these days, which I think you find in any discipline where it becomes sufficiently mature. If you go back 200 or 300 years, a scientist knew everything, right? I'm a scientist, I'm a botanist and a physicist and a chemist and all the science. These days, you're a molecular biologist focusing on one specific super niche thing. And it can be the same with security these days. You can be a security researcher focused on reverse engineering, focused on a very specific CPU architecture and a subdomain of that CPU architecture, which I think is excellent. It's just showing how far we've come and how mature we are as a field.
So let's ask someone who's been reasonably new to the field. Barney, I think you've been in 2 years. So, and you had a very interesting entry to this discipline here. Tell us a bit about yourself. How did you decide on cybersecurity? And how did you decide on pen testing? And give us a bit of background about your...
So I was a career changer. I was a career musician for 15 years, a guitarist, specializing in live session work. I played for sort of live artists and theater shows. And I just decided to change careers really because of the music industry. The climate at the time was declining and there wasn't enough work. And so I looked into different careers I could do. I was instantly drawn to IT, I think, because of the flexibility. So with my previous jobs, I like to travel a lot and I wanted to find a profession that I could do like anywhere in the world. I didn't want to stay in one place. So I actually responded to a campaign by the Department of Culture, Media and Sport, which was Fatima's next job could be in cyber. And I actually saw that advertisement and signed up and went on an 8-week course, which was fantastic, to be honest. It showed all the different areas of cybersecurity, including pen testing and governance, risk and compliance, which I think is another area that we maybe haven't spoken about, which I think is also quite a popular route into the industry. My first job was actually in a management consultancy and pen testing. Although I specialized in pen testing, the pen testing team was actually quite small. And the majority of the team was actually government risk and compliance, looking after things like ISO 27001 and PCI audits, which I think is, you know, it's a huge part of the field as well. And that was my entry, really.
Yeah.
So beyond the 8 weeks then, Barney, what other training did you have? Any qualifications or any sort of formalized training?
So I actually joined up to a kind of cybersecurity boot camp, which offered a learning path of various certifications. I did a group of certifications from a company called CompTIA. I did like the A plus, then the Network plus, Security plus, and then finished with the Pentest plus. And when I actually joined my first job, it was quite important because a lot of the pen testing jobs that we did were regulated. It was important for me to get Czech status as a Czech team member. So I went on the CREST route, which at the time was the CREST practitioner security analyst, which was the first exam, and then the CREST registered tester. And that's where I am at the moment.
Right. Is that one of the big differences from the early days, Glenn? I guess that you need a badge to wave at organizations to sort of say, yes, everyone trust me to do this. Because in those old days, you could just knock on the door and go, you got a bit of a problem, yeah? And see what happened.
Yeah, definitely. There weren't certifications when I got into this in the late noughties. My entry was somewhat haphazard. As a teenager, I tinkered and I tore things apart. And in hindsight, it was some degree of hacking, you know, tearing apart games, demo games, reverse engineering demo games, understanding how the internet works and how I could bypass things. Studying computer science at university just because I was good at computers. It was only at the end of my undergraduate on careers day when a company came along called SensePost and gave a presentation and said, hey, do you guys want to come work for us? We'll teach you, we'll let you hack into banks and pay you to do it. This is not a job. What are you saying? Because every other job placement company was, come work for us and wear a suit and sit in a cubicle and write Java code. So it was a slightly different entry path for me. I ended up doing an internship for them. That's where things kicked off. But yeah, back then there weren't really any or many certifications. And I don't think it's a good thing or a bad thing either way. It's fantastic that there are so many certifications these days. I think it really lets you know where you are and gives you almost goals to approach and to reach and to understand your own level. But some days, still these days, not everyone does certifications. It's useful for some reasons. I think the the best thing and the most wonderful thing about this career path is you don't need to do a degree or a certification or anything. You can jump on YouTube, watch some videos, and just tinker and play and learn. If you want to be a doctor, you probably have to go to your university medical.
But best not to do that. I think it...
and just grab a scalpel and start playing. But I think with this career path, it's definitely the best way to get into this career, and the best way to get good is just to tinker, to play, to break, to understand, and tear things apart. And as a bonus, yeah, definitely. Certs are not going to help. Certs are not going to not help. Certs are going to help.
And Alex, you did a degree, and at 18, you knew absolutely that you were going to be a cybersecurity specialist. Is that right?
I think 18-year-old me would have been a little bit shocked to see where I am now. Yeah, understatement. So I did a maths degree, which I absolutely loved. I had no specific career in mind with that. I just genuinely loved maths and, yeah, geek space, safe zone, I hope, here. So I was in my final year and I knew I didn't want to continue in education, but also, yeah, didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I was kind of having conversations with people and cryptography came up, and that's interesting, you know, big prime numbers and number theory and interesting things there. And then just kind of a natural extension from those conversations, some people said cybersecurity. And I'll be honest, I was really naive, kind of in hindsight, didn't really understand what that meant, but thought, yeah, that sounds quite interesting. So I just kind of took a leap of faith and yeah, I took a job in cybersecurity, really similar to Barney. I did some of the CompTIA exams. I learned what fiber optic cable was and what copper cable was and some really boring stuff that's been a really good foundation for my career, though. And yeah, I had some good mentors that made me do those exams. I wouldn't have probably done them without good support.
But did you have some solid computer science skills? I thought maths.
I had really bad programming skills. Really? I'd done work in R, and I was really good at data visualization and data processing. But really, I didn't update my computer. I really had like almost no cybersecurity experience. It was, looking back in hindsight, like I'm not really sure how that all happened, but it did. So yeah, it was just such a huge learning curve in the first place, and I just kind of absorbed so much in that first year. It was quite an incredible kind of transformation.
How about you, Barney? Do you have, I mean, it sounds like you must have had some solid skills because you've gone through a lot of training courses.
Well, previously, no real sort of hard computer skills. We dealt a lot with Macintosh computers in the music industry, so I was computer savvy. Course. I did have like my own sort of recording set up at home. But yeah, it was really until I started those CompTIA exams that I really started to understand how sort of computers work and networks.
All right. And is there a field you're specializing in? Is there something you want to, you're good at breaking?
I am really drawn to sort of the infrastructure network side of things. Yeah, I do want to develop more into sort of web application. I think obviously it's a really emerging field or, you know, getting a lot bigger anyway. And I really want to sort of specialize into sort of that sort of area.
Alex, what sort of, you've been in the industry now for about 5 or 7 years.
Five years this summer.
About 5 years. So what sort of options are open to someone who is at your level because of all the training you've done and the experience that you've had, probably at the sharp end much of it? What sort of options do you think you would be looking towards over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think one of the things I've kind of absorbed with this conversation so far already is, like, I guess one of the key points for me is, like, there's no cookbook for this. There's no recipe to follow to be a security tester or a security professional. And actually, that's one of the things I like the most about it. So if I'm honest, like, I'm not really too sure. So I've most recently been doing some work which has enabled me to do some team management and team leading. And that's been a new complete learning curve and growth for me. I guess what's really interesting me at the moment is threat-led penetration testing and kind of emulating threat actors more. So I like the kind of geopolitics of it, how different nation states behave, understanding that behavior, and then trying to kind of this is a bit grandiose, but you know, in some ways emulate that within my work so that it's more realistic and that what I'm simulating is actually a valid threat as opposed to just because I can. I mean, just because I can is fun, don't get me wrong, but when I'm thinking about what gives value and helps make the organizations working with I'm more secure, it helps the organizations I'm working with be more secure, I should say, that threat-led component's really important to me.
Because I was curious about the creative side of this, because I guess, you know, you mentioned PCI, so some of this must be fairly standardized and you kind of know what you're going to be testing. But beyond that, is there some, like say, that room for finding a way that other people didn't think of?
100%. That creative. And that's the thing I love the most about offensive security and is what keeps me coming back for more. There's no two jobs the same, and the landscape is changing so frequently. You know, it's what you can do on that given day that's not what I delivered last week or what I'll deliver next week. It's in that room with that computer in front of you. What can you do with the tools I have? And I think going back to something else we already talked about, the specialism side, that's why specialisms are important, because unfortunately, fortunately, just the nature of life, the exercises we do are time bound and we need to be able to deliver things efficiently and we need to have the skills in our fingertips rather than a Google away. Now, you know, that doesn't mean that you can't branch off into other work, but it's an efficiency thing, I think.
Yeah. Barney, could I say, I guess you're finding your feet, you've been in it a couple of years. So, I mean, it's the similar kind of thing, you know, the standardized bits and you have those tools at your fingertips and are you looking at where you go next with this?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely at the beginning, you know, it's good to sort of branch out into all areas. And then I think just quite naturally, I think everyone sort of finds a kind of area that they enjoy more than others and kind of specialize in that one area. I think that's a natural progression for maybe any job, really.
Right. But can I ask as well, just about pen testers as a tribe, community, I'm not sure what you call them or collective noun is for them, but are they contractors or are they, you know, like you, Alex, work for a company that offers these kinds of services? I'm just curious about sort of, you know, what, you know, how people set themselves up to do this.
Yeah, it's a blend for sure. I think there was some conversations earlier about regulation and there is a move more to work with kind of, be it CREST registered testers or people who've got certifications in the cyber scheme or whatnot, and you can actually get accreditations as companies as well. So different procurement will have different requirements for that, but lots of people contract as pen testers as well. I think if you go into the kind of more advanced security testing, like red teaming and purple teaming, those tend to be individuals that work together frequently, really understand each other and their skill sets, and everybody in that team will be a different specialism to make sure that the kind of branch of requirements for that type of testing is covered.
Yeah, I guess you assemble your team and then get to work. Something.
I mean, in a sense, Alex, you know, there are specialisms as well, but there is also more in terms of interworking, isn't there? You know, the threat analysts actually work quite closely with the offensive and the and the red team, the blue team, and there seems to be a lot more coming together of understanding where each of these careers come together, because I think only when you bring that team together actually can you make serious progress with some of the kind of, you know, sophisticated attacks that we see.
Oh, completely. And I think there's a rise more towards what we call purple teaming, which is kind of where you deliver offensive engagements that simulate cyber attacks, but you're doing that with the client fully being aware throughout. And the benefit of that is you're working directly with the client's blue team. So they can learn off the alerts that you're generating and vice versa. You can see what they've detected on what you've done. That collaboration is immensely valuable. And it never ceases to amaze me how two pieces of, well, the same piece of security software in two organizations detects things differently in a, even weeks apart. That always baffles me. Sometimes the how nonsensical some of this stuff can be, even though it's all computers.
No, I was going to say, because I was wondering if doing this job has changed the way you look at the world of the web. Just because, you know, as a journalist, I see spelling mistakes, I see extra spaces in writing all over the place, and just you're always on the lookout, you're always checking the text to sort of make sure it's, you know, it's been proofread properly. I just wonder if you guys are, you know, if when you go on the web online, you're always thinking, oh, that doesn't look quite right. Just whether you get really sensitive to those kinds of things, whether it, you know, does alter your perceptions of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's everywhere. It's nonstop. Every time you sign up for something, and the stuff that bugs me are ridiculous password policies. I signed up for something this morning. There's a password requirement policy of, you know, all, I don't know, caps and lowercase and special and more than 8 but fewer than 20 characters, and those types of really outdated, outmoded policies. I couldn't paste into the password input box. So definitely things like that. But at the same time, there's also, as I said earlier, hackers are curious. So every time we see something, you almost have to rein in the desire to pick things apart. It's like a magpie or something. You just want to pick at something and see how it works. So whatever it is, a new app or a new bit of hardware or a new website, or, you know, I think, you know, the new social media app Threads came out today, and the first thought is, oh, I wonder how that works. Let me fire up a proxy and start monitoring the traffic and tear apart the insides of the debugger and see how it works. So it's definitely that ongoing curiosity is what I find, whether it's day job or not. Just how does stuff work?
Are you the same, Barney? You're just curious about, sort of want to prod away it and see what's doing?
I think you definitely develop a kind of almost like paranoid mindset. Because definitely since I've been in the field, you know, I even had an email recently, about a couple of months ago, from a cybersecurity colleague, you know, sending me his mobile number saying, oh, I'm deciding to, you know, shut down my social media platform, you know, just contact me here. And obviously, you know, as a sort of cybersecurity professional, you kind of like, you know, is this real? Is this really from him? You certainly take a second look at most things, I think.
I wanted to ask all three of you, what are the things that you found really helpful in progressing in your career path? I mean, Glenn, one of the things that Mark and I were speaking earlier is that almost everyone that we've come across, you know, who've been in the industry for a while, they've fallen into cybersecurity, you know, pen testing. It's not like a planned route. And so, you know, what we'd like to do is to see what sort of pointers, what sort of helpful, I mean, having mentors maybe is an area, something that helps individuals trying to map a career path. What sort of things have you, each of you, found useful? Glenn, starting with you.
So you stole my answer there, Bharat. I was going straight for mentors.
Sorry.
And I think that's the I think we can unpick that a bit. So the concept of a mentor and why it's useful, because the field, you know, it is slightly unusual and a little bit hard to navigate, and it's, even today, it's still a little bit niche compared to other properly well long term established. You know, if you're going to be an engineer, this is hundreds of years of thought and establishment and whatnot. It's still a fairly newish field, so it can be quite difficult to navigate it, understand it, to know if it's for you, where you can fit in, and that kind of thing. I think the idea of having a mentor, either a specific person or a group of people you can go to and just ask questions. And in my experience, yeah, I had two or three very good mentors. I'm not sure in hindsight if they knew they were my mentors, or even if I knew they were mentors at the time. But looking back, they kind of guided me and shaped me and excited me about the field when I was still quite new and didn't really understand which direction to go in, or just the sheer awesomeness of what you can do and what you can achieve. At the same time, I think it's still kind of in the mentor category, but working, I think, especially in your early days, working for a well-respected, very, very good pen test firm or security firm. I think I'm a bit later in my career now. I work for myself, and I'm quite happy with that arrangement. But earlier on, that wouldn't have worked for me. Like, I worked for a very good pen test firm. It was called SensePost back then. It's Orange Cyber Defense now. But they really had this incredible tenacity and hunger for security. And it was, you know, the thought back then was you lived and you breathed security, and everyone would push each other to, you know, to their best possible limits. Whereas if we're left to our own devices, maybe, I don't think we necessarily get lazy, but maybe we're less motivated or less curious or less enthralled. So for example, one of my favorite things I do now is public speaking events. That's probably 20-30% of my kind of job, is speaking at conferences or events. That's how Bharat and I met. That's how I make all these kind of contacts. I really wanted to do that, but I was really, like, public speaking was my worst day at school. I had to give a speech in front of just my friends. I still have nightmares about that. But when I got on this journey, Black Hat and DEF CON, that's so cool, man. I'd love to do that one day. I'm so scared. I remember chatting to some friends, my first pen test job. Like, well, you know, just find a conference you like and write an abstract and submit it. Like, but I haven't done the research yet. And I just submit it. That will give you the motivation to actually do the work. And we'll be here and we'll support you. And that for me was a wonderful experience. And it got me onto that kind of track. And I don't think we mentioned this earlier on different career paths. You know, definitely conferences and public speaking and research and development, giving back to the community is definitely a big part of pen testing, security, ethical hacking and whatnot. I think having those people around you who can lift you up, that makes the biggest impact early in your career is my short answer.
Barney, any thoughts in terms of what's helped you so far?
Definitely mentorship has been a massive one. I think most organizations now do realize that. And both jobs that I've had in cybersecurity have assigned me a mentor that I can, you know, ask questions to and learn from. And I think if you're, you know, transitioning into cybersecurity, I think don't be afraid to ask, because I think the community is really, really friendly. It's really helpful. I've definitely found that. I've sort of just blindly messaged people going, you know, I'm new to this, you know, would you be up for, you know, a call and chatting about it? And on the whole, most people have been really receptive of that. And I've had great responses from people.
Yeah, cool.
And just to chip in there, even later in the career, so I'm seemingly the well-established person on this call, but I'm still new in so many fields. I was recently exploring some stuff I had no idea about. And I reach out to someone who's probably 15 years younger than me, but they're an expert in it, and that's no problem. You know, as Barney says, the community is very welcoming, and it's a strong ethos of the hacker community is to share knowledge. That goes right back to the roots, back to the 60s, where the word, you know, hacker originally came from. Back then, it's all about knowledge sharing and lifting each other up. And that still is very much the case.
Alex, I assume that in your organization, you actually have a formal mentoring program, and presumably you're a mentor to other youngsters.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy. It's it feels like that to me. Maybe I shouldn't say that out loud in a podcast, but I think for me, the big thing is trust and opportunity. I look back at the trust and opportunity I was given 5 years ago, and in hindsight, it feels kind of shocking. But then I realized that actually it's about the attributes that you have as a person, and the knowledge can be acquired. And I think if you trust in a person that they have the right attitude, the right ability to learn, then giving them that scope with the relevant safety nets, but trusting them to go and learn and do something interesting. And I'm, you know, it's actually really, really fruitful now to see people who, you know, you give that scope to, and then they come back and do something better than you could have done, some totally different tangent that you never would have explored. And that's really rewarding. Like allowing people the space to explore something new, even if you're not sure that they're quite there yet.
I would definitely second that. I remember my first ever engagement when it was like my second week being an intern, and I was given my own, like the first week, I kind of proved myself or something, just got settled in. The second week, I was given my own engagement with a very large financial organization and just said, hey, Glenn, get your target. You've got 2 weeks, go have fun. And I was simultaneously excited and terrified. It's like, well, who should I report to? And do I need to check before I do anything? It's like, no, we trust you, go for it. I think in hindsight, their level of trust really kind of built up my own confidence. And it turned out I tore that organization to shreds, which was a good start to my career, I think.
Yeah, good place to be. Interesting. I was wondering if we can speculate a bit about sort of where things might go, because obviously we've given people a good idea of sort of where it started. And it's got obviously a bit more formalized. There's some particular things that organizations ask you to do. But because I saw the other day something emerging called Pentest GPT, and someone trying to automate all this. So I just wonder, is that, does that worry you guys that there's some aspects of this that are going to be put under that? Alex, for yourself, I don't know if there's a lot of automated tools you use out there that, and you just, those are going to grow, and how it's changing in that respect.
Yeah, they certainly are growing, and there's definitely kind of more automated pen testing going on. I think pen testing is moving in that direction, and more of the kind of scenario-based testing, or testing where we're not just looking at the technology, but we're looking at the people and processes and how those interact together. That's not something I see even remotely in the future being emulated by a computer. But yeah, any aid that I can get to improve the efficiency, the reach that I have in my testing, I think is great. I think there will also be a move to kind of adversarial AI, you know, manipulating data sent to learning models to see how that manipulates the outcome of them. I think there's lots of really interesting research going on in that space, and I'm sure there's a whole load of kind of niche people specializing in that even already. So that's something that's super interesting. And then I also think, like, the kind of geopolitical sense, there's lots more openness around kind of national cybersecurity strategies, nation states coming out and publicly declaring their status in cyberspace, what they want to do, their aims. So I think that will inevitably seep into the security testing community, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
How about you, Bonnie? Lots to catch up with, keep up with as well? Because that strikes me as about, you know, as Glenn said, that you're always learning. But I just wonder, yeah, you I guess you have to adjust all the time to cope, to match.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I mean, I've only been assessing for a couple of years, but I'm definitely seeing a rapid change in the attack surface of businesses, I think. I guess that's been driven by the equally rapid adoption of, like, cloud services. So what traditionally used to be physical infrastructure, I guess, has now been replaced with the flexibility and maybe sometimes convenience of virtualization. But I guess a lot of the problems that I'm seeing is that businesses sometimes have a hard task of keeping track of everything that they own. So
that's true.
It's quite easy now for a developer to sort of spin up a virtualized instance in the cloud to kind of test their code, but then sometimes forget to take it down again. So I think that's been...
See a lot of those, for sure. Yeah. So one thing I did as a journalist was scrape through AWS buckets. That was fun. This was turned up lots of interesting things there. How about you, Glenn? I don't know about yourself. You said you're always improving your skills as well. But are you worried about that automation side of things? Not going to put anybody out of a job particularly?
It's a good question. There definitely is a flurry of AI, what you call it, excitement or hype or something now. It's definitely going to shake things up. But I think it's still pretty much business as usual for the foreseeable future. There's lots of stories about ChatGPT helping you write malware and things like that. There's nothing that you couldn't learn from a Google query or reading a blog. Maybe it's very slightly more accessible. And you know, maybe for phishing campaigns. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the GoFish project, open source phishing platforms. I maintain that project now. I didn't create it, but I maintain it now. And I added a ChatGPT module to it. So you can just click create template, click create email, click create page, etc. Yeah, slightly convenient maybe. Who knows? I think it might shake things up more so on the side that Alex mentioned, maybe data modeling and interpreting massive amounts of data, essentially emulating analysts. Possibly he has 10,000 IOCs in the case of compromise, please go through them and tell me anything that seems a little bit odd. You know, maybe it's easier to ask a bot than to go and write an R query or something. Maybe slightly devil's advocate, something I always try and keep in mind is how useful we are as pen testers and as an industry. Haroon Mir gave an excellent talk about 10 years ago now called Is Pen Testing Considered Harmful? And one of the things he brought up was the idea that we need to be mindful as an industry that that pen testers aren't just emulating other pen testers, because we go and we do a pen test and we found these things, okay, we fix these things, we come in again, do another pen test, but we're just acting like other pen testers because those are things that pen testers would find, as opposed to real world problems and threats that hackers would actually go and target. So that's something that I am always quite mindful of, because the industry is huge and there's a lot of money and there's a lot of activity and people and things going on. I'm always mindful of, are we actually doing good? Like, let's make sure that we're actually contributing to security and making things better in one way or another, but just keeping an eye on ourselves, because sometimes I find we're in our own little bubble. Maybe sometimes we need external stakeholders or external points of view or just a reality check to make sure that we are on the noble path.
Yeah, we find that with ISF members, a lot of them obviously, you know, have a lot of regulatory responsibilities and they do tick a lot of boxes. And sometimes I get the impression that that's all that some people do. And they don't actually drill down into, well, what does that mean for our organization? Yeah,
it gives you an absolute, the risk that I find is gives you an absolute false sense of security. Okay, we had a pen test done. they said we're good, so we're good. It's like, no, you're safe against pen testers. It's like having antivirus, but antivirus is outdated. It's like, oh, the AV, I'm safe, so I can click this link. Your AV is outdated. And anyway, any hacker with assault can bypass any antivirus software. So often I find for an engagement, if an organization is using antivirus, it's almost easier to get someone to click a link or to download a file or to do something because they have a false sense of security. I've got AV, that's fine. I'll click the links and download the things. AV would tell me if this was bad. And I find sometimes in the industry, we sometimes perpetuate that with the approaches taken to pen test, especially when it's more like checkbox pen testing. I think threat modeling is excellent. We should definitely do that, but just be a bit wary of just kind of tick boxing and certifying, right, this organization is safe.
I think that even extends to red teaming. I completely agree. Just because you've had adversary emulation and somebody's come in and tested whether a scenario is feasible or not, that doesn't mean that tomorrow it's not going to be feasible when there's a new zero day or, you know, an organization spent a large amount of time researching your stuff or whatever it is. It's there's very little certainty gained. And I think it's agreed really important to highlight the gaps in the coverage and also just kind of how gray some of this stuff often is.
Yeah, because certainly one of the best customers of security tools is the bad guys. When they have all the tools, they run them all.
They
find all the loopholes, and that's sometimes that's how they get in.
I've been involved in pen tests where I come in straight after another vendor, and they've got a green report, A+ security, everything's fine, and I break in within 5 minutes just because fresh mindset, different approach.
Yeah,
it's not to say I'm an amazing hacker. It could be the other way around. I did a test, I said everything's fine. Another firm comes in, hey presto, they break in. So.
Yeah.
A pen test doesn't mean that you're secure. It means that you're secure against the things that tester tested against. Yeah. I think a good mindset for any organization is to assume that you are breached.
Yeah, absolutely.
Assume you're compromised and take actions in the way you handle your data. That's the whole idea behind zero trust. Just assume everything is breached and everything is dirty and contaminated. And that's probably quite a useful way to approach things.
Yeah. I just to round things up, are any more questions? I think we've given people a pretty good idea, but I'm not sure if there's anything you wanted to round up on.
Just maybe one more. You know, we started off with saying that, you know, there is a skills gap issue. Is this still an issue? You know, are we still in need for skills in this particular segment, you know, specific discipline? And are we making it attractive? You know, are the salaries attractive? Do we address the diversity inclusion sort of issues? What do you think in terms of the industry?
Difficult question. Yeah, no one wants to answer that. Barney, are you making more money as doing this than you were as a musician? I don't know. Difficult question to answer, but yeah, is it a good place to be?
Yeah, it's a difficult question to answer. I mean, I actually took a pay cut when I took my first role in pen testing. Quite a significant, about 10 grand. I took a 10 grand pay cut for my first role. So I think there's definitely, you know, you have to be expected to do that, I think, within the industry. When you start out, especially, I think there is obviously an amazing career progression and you can, you know, the earning potential can get, you know, enormous. But I think you've got to be realistic if you're already established in one profession and then moving to a new profession, you are going to be new, you know, you're going to be fighting for jobs along with graduates. So you can expect sort of, you know, that sort of salaries. I think that there is probably a long way to go with like diversity and inclusion, I think, definitely from what I've seen within the industry. I think it's definitely on the agenda for most organizations, and hopefully, you know, most people are addressing those issues that we face.
Yes, I think it's definitely I'm sorry if you have other answers, but yeah, definitely agree. I think getting in, you can definitely take a pay cut, but I've seen a lot of people come from an established job to, you know, sort of into pen testing. And if you're not motivated by the money, you'll end up making a lot of money. If you want to get into security for the money, you probably won't make that much. But if you're just passionate and I'm going to stop being a bank or whatever, I want to be a hacker, and you're really enthusiastic, passionate, and you get stuck into it, yeah, you'll take an initial pay cut. I've seen that enthusiasm pay off big dividends in the long run.
I totally agree.
So do you all call yourselves hackers? Is that a thing? Is that a... You're badge-wearing hackers?
I don't really use the word hacker, actually. And I really kind of appreciate the recent move by the Security Council to security tester. when I tell people I'm a penetration tester, worst I tell them I'm a Crest registered penetration tester, that usually prompts laughs for people who are not in cybersecurity industry. I think it's actually a really good move for kind of from an inclusion diversity perspective to move towards the security tester label.
And they've accommodated vulnerability testing and other areas, similar areas to that. So that makes sense, yes. Okay, that's been very useful. Glenn, Alex, I think that's sort of excellent insights into this area. And Barney, you know, wonderful mapping of your musical career onto pen testing and beyond.
Just to round up then, just one final comment quickly from all of you. Just I suspect I know the answer to this, but would you recommend security testing as a career? And if there's one thing someone should do if they want to get in it, what should they do? So starting with you, Barney, if you know, which I guess you would recommend it, but if you know, if someone wants to get started, what should they do?
Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely recommend it. I think it definitely suits people who enjoy solving puzzles. I think that's definitely one of the key aspects. If you've got like a curious, inquisitive nature, this is definitely the profession for you. I think if you want to get more information, I think there's plenty of websites out there that actually can train sort of technical skills, such as TryHackMe. Have a great website that you can sort of, it guides you through different rooms that you can complete. And gives you a flavor of what penetration testing is all about. And then there's Hack the Box, which is slightly more advanced, but you can go on to those as well.
Excellent. Thank you. Alex, I guess you'd recommend it. Yeah. One thing that people should do.
Yeah, definitely would recommend. I think for me, it's about getting that solid technical foundation. I'm really thankful to the people that forced me to do that in the beginning, reticently. But I now try and encourage others to do the same because I think it pays off dividends later down the line. And it's impossible to really kind of unpick things if you don't properly understand them. So yeah, doing some sort of really basic networking and security exams would be my suggestion.
So thanks. And Glenn, I guess you would recommend it as well, but
that's maybe it's not for everyone, but it's definitely for us on the call and for those hopefully listening. It's definitely a very fun, very rewarding career path. And as you progress, there's a lot of different options that you can go into. So if you want to start with the actual, I want to say pen testing now, what did we
security
say?
Test.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
I'm teasing you. Yeah, the break into things side of things, and then maybe you progress elsewhere. So for me, it was definitely a younger person's game. I don't do that much pen testing anymore. I think this is the energy of youth, maybe. But definitely there's some older pen testers who are in their 50s and still breaking stuff. I think the best advice for me, if this kind of career path interests you, is just to tinker. It's so easy these days. Download whatever virtual machine software you want, VirtualBox or something, set up an entire virtual lab, Windows boxes, Linux boxes, create a whole Windows domain, create an entire organization, and just get tinkering. How does stuff work? How does authentication work? Put up a website and just break stuff. Not a good idea to go and hack, you know, real websites. You know, if it's try hacking or something, that's fine. But don't cut your teeth breaking in real stuff. Create your own environment and get stuck in there. And also, I'd really encourage people to build more tools. The kind of curiosity of tinkering, but also building little utilities, little tools, research projects, that kind of thing. I think there's so much opportunity there, and that's a space that's really untapped. So I'd really encourage listeners to have that mindset. Hackers are also builders, and definitely go and explore that avenue.
Yeah, just get out there, have a go. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Barrett, for setting this up. This has been fab. I've learned a lot, and I think I'm more convinced that I should have been a pen tester earlier on as well. Thanks to everyone for listening. Tell your friends. You can now find ISF podcasts on all major podcast platforms. If you look at the show notes for our page on Audio Boom, you can subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode, and who'd want to do that? The podcasts are also available at securityforum.org, where you can also learn more about ISF research tools and points.